Hello, everyone, and welcome to Quinn Cummings Gives Bad Advice, the podcast where I, Quinn Cummings, give advice to people I do not know. If you're joining us for the first time, you may be asking yourself, does Quinn really want to give me bad advice? And the answer is no, I do not want to give you bad advice. I want to give you good advice. But I have absolutely no qualification to give you any sort of advice at all. I am not faith. I am not hope. I am not charity. I give advice because it amuses me to do so. So you might be asking yourself, will this advice I'm about to give you be good advice? Well, I think the answer is in the title of the podcast. If you want me to give you bad advice, you can leave a question for me at qcbad.com. It's completely anonymous, and better yet, it's completely free. So I can offer up this advice with a 100% money-back guarantee. Now, let's get started. My first one is from qcbad.com. Subject, eating too many lockdown carbs. Dear Quinn, my diet at the start of lockdown was good. I made great efforts to cook healthy and eat more fruit, veg, protein, and fewer carbs. But the longer it went on, the lazier I got, and the more carbs I ate and craved. Any suggestions for getting back off the carbs? It's hot here, so I'm cooking less, too. Oh, my friend, I am so there. I cloak it in terms of, I'm supporting my friend's bakery, like that somehow makes the fruit pies I'm gobbling through like a premenstrual Pac-Man a charitable donation. We crave carbs when we are depressed. This time is, among other things, depressing. I can suggest eating fewer carbs, but you already know that. Consort periodically kicks carbs, and I both applaud him and wish to move out for the first 48 hours because sugar is a drug and it gets a little train spotting around here. All this to say, I have no idea. Maybe. And I remind you of the title of this podcast and that I have no idea what I am talking about. Try intermittent fasting if you can't go cold turkey because right now you're keeping your blood sugar higher than maybe it ought to be, and there's some interesting evidence suggesting intermittent fasting brings down blood sugar. At the very least, it'll make the time pass. And now if you will excuse me, I have to eat an entire fruit pie because it's 2020. This one comes from qcbad.com. Subject, open marriage. Dear Quinn, what do you think about opening up marriages or being part of a polygamous relationship? Do you think it will make a long-term relationship more secure or less? I think humans have had some sort of partner bonding since we were strolling around naked on the veldt, that it's changed pretty much constantly, and that we always act as if any other way than what we're doing right now is weird. I think marriage as we know it developed because agriculture demands a community of people who have to do what you say on account of being related to them. I think we're living, on average, twice as long as we did in 1900, and that certainly puts a new spin on till death do you part. Quinn, what are you saying? I'm getting there. I think a percentage of humans are polyamorous but also happiest in a committed relationship. Exhibit A being the size of male human testicles, which are, relative to other primates, somewhere between the size of monogamous testicles, which would be smaller on account of their not fighting other sperm for the egg, and polygamous testicles, larger to make that other fighting sperm fighting sperm. If my daughter is listening to this podcast, I am sorry to tell you she is now dead from hearing her mother say testicles that often. But even if the male human gonads are all, I could go either way on the whole monogamy thing, we are not just our gonads. We are also brains, and each human brain is basically an irregular verb. Even if both sides of a couple say, yes, I believe in polyamory, time to start alarming our relatives at the holidays. What each person thinks this polyamory will look like might be worlds apart. Both sides of a couple must communicate, possibly to a granular level, what the rules will be. And then, because hammering out these details wasn't uncomfortable enough, you may have to renegotiate because, again, human brains, irregular verb. The abstraction of an open relationship might be a lot more appealing than actually hearing your partner arrive home at 3 a.m. and slip into a shower to wash off the night. I suspect if an open marriage is going to work, it is far less about sex than it is about endless communication and negotiation. And I don't know a lot of people who wish aloud for more uncomfortable conversations with their spouse. I also fully expect to go to my first throuple wedding before the decade is out, possibly via Zoom. And I sincerely wish those crazy kids all the luck in the world. This one comes from QCBad.com. Subject, back to school.
Hi, Quinn. My teaching partner has been posting photos of herself at various social gatherings. No masks, no social distancing. Come September, we will be sharing a classroom with 29 little people. I'm kind of really upset that she is not taking the pandemic seriously. What should I do?
If she is someone you otherwise liked, I'd reach out to her ahead of time. Maybe ask her what her thinking is. I'm guessing, though, that you don't feel really comfortable doing that, or that you would have done it already. I think you have to let the school, or depending on your state, your union know, and explain your concerns dispassionately. I usually don't think much of tattletales, but this person is ramping up to risk the health of hundreds of people.
Hundreds, Quinn?
Yeah, hundreds. Because every one of those students goes home to a family, and that family has a community, and 3 weeks from now, the Queen of Karaoke Night could be a vector. These people she's around right now have decided to be dumbasses. Your class won't have the luxury. Drop the dime. This one comes from QCBad.com. Subject, what's wrong with Act 3?
Dear Quinn, I've been an artist for over 30 years, and I think I'm done. While I never got as famous for my craft as friends, I made a nice living, got some fans, have a body of work I'm proud of. And now, I'm done. And I'm okay with it. My problem? My husband does not want me to quit. My kid thinks this is depression about COVID limiting art right now and that I don't really mean it. Friends just seem startled. But the moment I decided I was done, I felt lighter, more at peace with the world. Our finances are not great. I can't afford to retire, so I will have to find another way to make money. But isn't that okay? How do I let my loved ones know I really am done and I'm relieved? Or am I just depressed and I don't know it?
Let's say you cobbled a particular kind of shoe and you were really, really good at it. Are you an artist? Kind of, but it's also a skill you have honed over the years. It's not like you were moving the wingtip Oxford into new design realms. You make an excellent shoe. You are a craftsman. A craftsman gets up every day and does their job. An artist gets up every day and does their job. But there is a reason our friends, the ancient Greeks, came up with the idea of the muses, the goddesses of the arts. There are times when you are creating where you can barely keep up with your own ideas, where it feels less that you are creating than you are transcribing the ideas of someone far more talented than yourself. Then maybe you wake up one day and you realize, wow, the muse left. I am here by myself. And the work isn't effortless or fun or meaningful. It's drudge work. You aren't making wingtips, and for now, the need to make art has passed. People around you who love you assume art is like shoemaking, and it's not. You owe them no answer, but for the sake of familial harmony, maybe frame it in terms of, I need to look at new things right now, and when I'm ready, I'll get back to making art. Then you get a job. If you want, make allusions to how this job is part of some new art you're dreaming up but aren't ready to talk about yet. And who knows? Maybe you're standing at Target one day refolding shirts and the muse walks back into your head, refreshed and eager to do something unexpected with red polo shirts. This is your art. You don't owe anyone an explanation. This one comes from qcbad.com. Subject: I might kill someone.
Dear Quinn, I go for a walk very early in the morning to avoid people. I get so incredibly angry when I'm out and I see selfish people without masks or people who don't at least try to stay a good distance from me. This morning, one asshole told me I'd be fine as I backed off the sidewalk onto someone's lawn to avoid him. By the time I get home, I am so angry I have a tension headache, and the million things I should have said, well, probably shouldn't have said, are swirling around in my head. I know saying something doesn't help, it just riles me up more. What do I do with this anger? How do I make it stop? How do I just not care?
Hello, me. Were this any other time, I'd remind you that other people's stupidity is not your business, but let's be honest, I wouldn't really mean it. For example, if someone is stupid enough to drink a fifth of Jack Daniels in the Target parking lot and then drive home, everyone else on the road is potentially going to be punished for that person's stupidity. My extended family lost a dear friend to COVID. A man who had been very, very careful, as had all of his family. The only possible conclusion to draw is that someone in the outer circle of his life was a dumbass. Maybe even only once. Our friend is now gone. You are right to behave and want others to behave. But, seeing as a majority of states allow people to walk around with guns, and how a percentage of Americans have confused science and liberty right now, I am going to strongly suggest you not evangelize for being less of a dumbass. There is no combination of words which is going to change stupid. I guess my suggestion is treat them as you would a toddler throwing a tantrum. Do not engage. Do not respond to their dismissive, snotty remarks. Create the boundaries you need to feel safe, even if it means walking in the middle of someone's yard. And then, as they pass you, being dumbasses, think about all those stories of people who thought this was nothing and have died. Think of the videos we have seen of people on ventilators saying, "I thought this was a hoax." Meditate on how one of these people you just passed might end up getting very, very sick. And then come home and Google how to help get out the vote this year. This one is going to be a little different. It's a good question, but it's a long question, so I'm going to paraphrase them. And then I'll give the question part at the end. This person had a child with their same-sex partner. The two of them split up. This person who wrote in was the non-custodial parent, supported financially, but felt as if they were cut off from their child. Once their child went to college, they tried to create a relationship. The child wasn't particularly amenable to it, and this individual is asking about their child, who will be 21 next month. Here's the question.
How do I shake the feeling that I'm a horrible parent because my kid has chosen not to speak to me? All I invested in him seems for naught, and I miss him.
I think that when our children are small and we love them unconditionally, it's easier, at least in part because they can only hurt us so much. If someone who is less than 3 feet tall tells you that you're a poopy head, well, it would take an adult of unbearable fragility to fall apart over that. It's harder not to be hurt when they're old enough to look you in the eye, but you can't look them in the eye because they have made it abundantly clear you aren't a part of their lives. But you are still the adult. Your brain is fully formed, if a little achy around the edges right now. His brain is not fully formed yet and won't be for a few more years. He is currently at Olympian levels of self-absorption, which is completely obnoxious and completely appropriate. He's thinking about how to be a human, how to be a man, how to make his way in the world, how to get that person over there consensually naked. All of this is far more interesting to him than dealing with his childhood stuff, which might make him feel sad or angry at the woman he calls mom. At the very least, dealing with his unfinished childhood stuff doesn't increase the odds of getting someone consensually naked, even a little bit. When they are 20 or nearly 21, there is no evolutionary benefit to being interested in their parents. You are not going to get what you need from him. Not right now, and also not ever. He doesn't possess a time machine which will give you back the years you lost with him. At best, someday you two will have a relationship based on the present, on seeing each other as you are at that time. But in the meanwhile, here's my bad advice. Write him a letter. Pour out every bit of your pain at losing the chance to be his mother, your ache for him now. And then delete all of it and write something like, I love you, I will always love you, and I'm here. And then sign it, because anything else you say will come off as an attempt to manipulate him, and I promise you, this will not work in any way, shape, or form. He must come to you. In the meanwhile, find a therapist who specializes in grieving or a grief group, because while you have absolutely no control over how he behaves, I think you never got the chance to feel the magnitude of the loss of this relationship, and you deserve that. If you can't go for yourself, go because a mother who has processed her grief is a mother he is far more likely to keep talking to. I think that's enough bad advice for today. And remember, I can't give you bad advice if you don't ask for it. Your question doesn't have to be profound, complex, or emotionally demanding. It can be about pretty much anything because, let's face it, I am unqualified to offer advice across a wide range of subject matter. And as we all know, sometimes the nuttiest question gets the best bad advice. You can reach me on Twitter, at QuinnC, that's QUINNCY at twitter.com. Or you can post a question to qcbad.com. Just log into letter Q, letter C, BAD.com, and there's a question form right there. The question can be any length, but I'm finding they work better if they're shorter. Just a hint. Before I go, I'd like to thank Richard Emmett, who composed my groovy music, and Keith Greenstein, who designed my groovy logo. People have already started asking me how they can get a bad advice fork in a toaster t-shirt or coffee mug, and my answer to them is, hang in there, we are working on it. I also want to thank Phil Rohr and Prime Rib Productions for making it possible for you to hear any of this. Okay, that's enough for now. Keep those questions coming, and I'll see you all next time.